Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Get ready for an hour focused on unique, unscripted television. We've got the players behind two series that kicked off this morning. At Disney Plus, Disney Shock Class is in session. Executive producer Spike Preston joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. You could declare Restaurant on the Edge, available from Netflix, the ultimate restaurant impossible. The idea? Transform eating establishments located in some of the most magnificent places and maybe dangerous places on the planet. Setting the table for today this hour, creator executive producer Courtney Hazlett. Also ahead, Mr. World's super duper deal, Day of the Dead Rises through Sci-Fi, and our new classic trivia winner. Hey everyone, I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get 3 free books when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Great to have you with us this final Friday of February 2020 at the program All About Television. Great guests coming your way in the hour ahead and a whole lot more, and we invite you to be interactive with us. All it takes is a phone call from you. So pick up the phone and dial in with this number. 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is due anywhere you're catching across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. And we've got our chat room available for you. It's SimonApple04 by name. You can find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So you can fill another room. Either way, we will hear you. And while the program is on the air, you can connect to us by using Facebook Timeline. You got a Facebook icon, your Blog Talk speaker, or TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions and other people will be live with you. Spike Preston from Disney Shock Class live with us from Santa Monica, California, after these news notes. Series creator producer mogul Dick Wolf is set to carry out one of the biggest production commitments in television history. Under a 5-year agreement reportedly worth $1 billion, Wolf remained at Universal Television and developed multiple new series for NBC, Peacock, that's NBC Universal's mega plumbing venture starting April 15th, and other services. Wolf will get 3 more seasons of Law & Order Special Victims Unit and the Trio of Chicago series, that's PD, Fire, and Men, running on NBC under a multi-year renewal clause. This agreement does not cover Wolf's pair of CBS's primetime series, FBI, and the most recently started FBI Most Wanted. One early Peacock series prospect, the on-and-off began Hate Crimes, Law & Order spinoff, NBC authorized last year. Earlier, Peacock agreed to present a library of Wolf's Law & Order Chicago episodes at launch. That deal is priced between $300 and $400 million. Before there was The Walking Dead, there was The Living Dead, that popular set of zombie flicks put together by George Romero. Now, one of those films, Day of the Dead, that was a sequel to Night of the Living Dead, will turn into a 10-episode series on Sci-Fi. In this rendering, 6 people try to get through the first 24 hours of an undead invasion. Cartel Entertainment and Hi-Fi Studios will partner up on this series. Separately, Sci-Fi will go forward with Surrealtor, The Surrealtor. That's a drama where the real estate up for sale is either haunted or possessed. Now some quickies. Tyler Perry's first scripted series for kids, Young Dylan, with the pop star of the same name, opens tonight on Nickelodeon. Twimmies, the BET dramedy from Emmy winner writer producer Lena Waithe, will debut next Tuesday night. Umbrella Academy showrunner Steve Blackman will continue working with Netflix through his Borderline venture. Umbrella's second season will premiere later this year. And Little Writer creator Lee Eisenberg's first ever under his new Apple TV Plus development pack will be a WeWork miniseries. And that is news notes for today. As mentioned, today we're going to showcase a pair of very unusual, unscripted series, both of which premiered this morning. The first one, this half hour, is Disney Shock Class, coming your way on Disney+. And the executive producer behind is someone whose name you might just know, either as one of the writers on Seinfeld in the 1990s, then a decade afterward, for 3 years, he was Fox's Saturday Night Late Show host, a program called Talk Show, and then more recently on the Esquire Network. It's a pleasure to have this program for the first time, live from Santa Monica, California, Spike Preston. Spike, welcome in.
Hi, Simon. How are you?
Perfect. Fine, thank you. Congrats on getting your new show off the ground on Disney+. How's it going so far?
Well, we're only minutes into the launch, and it's going amazing. This is a project that's very special and dear to me. We had a tremendous time shooting it. It was so much fun. But I think, you know, we all remember what it was like to be in shop class in high school. And, you know, unfortunately these days schools are cutting out shop class because of budget cuts. And, you know, we came up with this show because we wanted to put a spotlight on how important it is to many generations of people, not just the adults, but the kids who are good with their hands, that, you know, there's still a place for you. We're thinking about you. And, you know, if this is your talent, we want to help you get your talent out there.
Yes, Mike, this is the second Friday in a row that we've highlighted a Disney series, you know, our Disney Plus the Disney Channel, was the competition series, which is something really new for both of these services. In the case of Disney Channel, it's Disney Fam Jam, the premiered Sunday night, where two families get together and they learn a dance routine, and the studio audience awards one of them $10,000 and a trophy, the other gets $2,500. But the point is that the families come together in a very unusual way. When you and your colleagues decide to come up with Shop Class, what was the idea? The same idea, for example, to bring these teams together and show, maybe get them beyond their comfort zone?
Well, I mean, when the show was brought in and we started developing it, like any great show, it can be sold in two words, and this one was Shop Class. It was pitched to us, and I said, I love this idea. And there are a couple of special things that happened when we were filming the series. You know, this is a series that has real shop class teachers from around the United States and real talented students who are also into building with their hands, paired up and competing against each other. But here's what's special about this series, and Disney Plus really brought it out of our contestants. Everybody in the series is rooting for each other. The teachers are communicating all of this acquired knowledge, these little hints of how to build and make your build. And the teams, even though they are competing, are really cheering and whistling for each other. I've worked on a lot of shows at this point. This was one of those special experiences. On a personal note, I remember coming home with that bookshelf we all made in like the ninth grade. I didn't come from a family that built anything. My dad didn't know how to work with his hands. And when I heard my teacher say, we're going to build a bookshelf, and then we put it together, and then I learned about stain, and I learned about lacquer, and I brought this thing home, my family, and this didn't happen a lot, but they were impressed for one of the first times in their lives that I had built something with my hands, and they put it up on the wall. I could not have felt more proud. And, you know, I saw that in these 18 teams that are competing. And it was really, that with Justin Long, who's hilarious and really great with everyone. The show just turned out to be so much better than we could have ever hoped.
Do you wish after filming this that you had that kind of experience in Shop Class where, again, you had like a live audience rooting everybody in the class on?
I'm sorry?
You wish that way back in Shop Class, you know, when you were taking it, or you knew people who were in high school, that you had a live audience like watching your projects getting built and where you are every step of the way.
A large audience, absolutely. But, it's. I think families are going to sit down and watch this show, and, you know, we would be in the booth watching the kids build, and they have 12 hours, they have days to kind of put stuff together, but you see, you learn stuff. You sit here and you're like, oh my God, well, that's how that gets done. And, you know, what I especially loved were the students who don't really have any constraints on how they approach a problem. They would come at it from different angles and come up with ideas that you go, gosh, I would have never thought that. And then it was up to the team and the shop teachers to decide, you know, is this a good idea? Can we accomplish this idea in the time we have? And frequently, they made it. Sometimes they didn't. But that's what was fun about the series. You know, another personal note for me, just as someone who, you know, usually is writing comedy, I take a drive every weekend to Malibu. And on the drive home, when I'm coming back to my house, there's always a red light that I hit. And right next to it is a little free library, one of these little boxes that kids put books in that they've read and they can take a book out. And it's a national organization, little free, right? This thing is so dilapidated. The glass was broken. There were squirrels in it. A couple of days I went by, the books were all wet. So while we were developing this show, that Monday I came in and I said, I have the first build. We're going to build, we're going to tell these kids we need a little free library that can stand up to bugs, to rain, and to vandals. And that's the first episode of the show. And wait till you see how it turned out. It's awesome.
And as a matter of fact, you can see that episode right now if you have Disney Plus on your smart TV set or smart TV device and subscribing to it, other places as well. The show is Disney Shop Class, and we've got the executive producer, Spike Burson, with us. He's live from Santa Monica, California. This half hour on tomorrow will be televised. So I'm having with you live from the other side of the U.S. of A., namely Nueva York, where it's 39 degrees at the top of the hour. Happy to have you aboard for the program All About Television. We're on every Monday and Friday at this hour on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and iHeartRadio. And we want to hear from you, so make a call, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Next Friday on our program, we're going to have the executive producer of a new Discovery Channel series involving Rob Riggle. You've seen that man in all sorts of ways lately on the popular ABC series Holy Moly. Yes, he's going to be back when that series premieres its second season this summer. But in the meantime, he's become a global investigator on the Discovery Channel, and he is going all over the world in search of global mysteries, unsolving them. Joseph Schneider, the executive producer of the program, he's with us live next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. How long did it take, Spike, to come up with the idea of Shop Class?
How long did it take? It took a little while to develop out the series. You know, we had the title the whole time. We wanted to, you know, you have to figure out the format and how that works. And with Disney Plus, we found a great partner. You know, they, you know, originally we didn't even think about having one of the Disney Imagineers involved as one of our hosts, so one of our judges. So we have Justin Long as our host. We have Lauren Mack, an interior designer, and Brooks Atwood, an architect, as permanent hosts. And Disney Plus said, why don't we bring in one of our Imagineers every episode and have them judge, which we thought was an awesome idea. So, you know, our partnership between, you know, Hangar 56, my company, and Disney Plus, you know, could not have been better. But the show really came together really quickly. You know, sometimes these shows are in development for a year or so. This one, they heard the idea. They ordered it right to series. We figured out the format, and now here it is for all of you. It's one of those special shows.
So how many teams are involved, and how did you and your colleagues find them?
Well, there are 18 teams consisting of two teenagers and one shop class teacher. And, you know, that – finding them is just casting. We hire a casting department and put out, you know, a notice for who are the all-star shop class teachers in America. Who are the ones? You know, give us that top tier of teachers, and then let's find the kids who, you know, are the best at building. The kids who, you know, maybe aren't playing softball or baseball, or who just this is their thing and have distinguished themselves in some way. So casting then hands off that big pot to us, and we get together with Disney Plus, and we put together the teams, and that's how it all comes together.
And then from there, how do you determine the projects that these teams collect? For example, the Little Free Library you talked about a moment ago, but also coming up, you've got one where the teams are going to design their own miniature golf holes. See, holy moly.
Right. Yes. So the question is how I missed your question.
How do you come up with the challenges, the shop class challenges that each team has to go through?
That's our little production development team here at Hangar 56. But I can tell you I was personally involved with my co-CEO John Stevens, you know, the kids here who work with us and some of the Disney Plus folks, we sat and we came up with, I think we have 3 days to do a build. What would be, give us a little bit of a Mythbusters test. What is needed out in the world that's kind of interesting and fun? And you know, I personally was thinking, what will my 11-year-old and 9-year-old who love these shows, what will they want to watch, on the weekend, and what will their mom be okay letting them watch? So how is their takeaway, and how is there some educational aspect to what the show is? So we threw that onto the table and really approached it like I would approach any other writing job. Like, here are the parameters. Let's start thinking. And like I said, with Little Free Library, I saw it. I saw this beautiful idea for books that you can take out, yet the structure didn't work. So I go, there's a place we can help. With the miniature golf, which was pitched to us, kids love to miniature golf. But when was the last time anybody invented a new miniature golf hole? All right, let's try that. There's a skateboard stunt coming up where we thought, you know, here in Southern California, all of our kids love to skateboard. But when you go to a skate park, there are the same little stunts and little tricks and things to use. So can we come up with something new in 3 days that we can test and will work? So that was the little framework we work with these designs.
So once the challenge is put forward, how long do the teams have to work on it? And then what happens from there in terms of getting evaluated, how they move to the next round and ultimately to the finals?
Well, each team first has – there's a design phase that they have to go through. So it's essentially around 3 12-hour days. And there are three teams in each episode for the first six episodes. They have to come up with the idea. They have to talk to our judges and hear their input. They have to then decide with their teacher if they're going to be able to execute this idea and the amount of time they have to do it. I mean, because, like, you know, you brought up a miniature golf hole. You know, that's a pretty big endeavor to try to pull off in 3 12-hour days. And then it's a race against the clock, which is, really interesting to watch unfold. So you may have, you know, want to build a giant windmill that's maybe 7 foot tall. But as we're watching the days unfold here, we're learning there's no way we will get that done. We might be able to build a windmill, but we're not going to be able to finish the project, which means there's a good chance we will lose. So that's the drama of the series, is watching that go on. Then we have six semifinalists competing in the second-to-last episode, leading to three teams who go to the finals. And one team at the end is declared the shop class champion, and they take home a bunch of big prizes that you'll hear about in the final episode.
Of all the challenges that these teams face, what would you say is the most unique or the most clever craziness, most unique thing that you came up with?
I don't know. You know, I'm always partial to kind of my ideas because I came up with them. But every episode has some really interesting turns that we didn't expect, let's say. So I, you know, having approved with Disney and John all of the builds, I like all the builds. They're all really cool and really fun and interesting to me. What I found interesting about this show is the little things that could go wrong. Right. And I can't quite get into how everyone did and what they did, but let's just take miniature golf for everybody. What we did not expect to happen was to discover how hard it would be to actually build something where the ball would actually go in the hole at the end. It was the last consideration. You know, if you think about that right now, like, what would I design as a miniature golf hole? You might come up with a big concept. What you need to do is you need to figure out the physics or whatever branch of science it is that will make it possible to get that ball from the tee into that hole. Because without telling you what happened, a couple of them, they didn't execute it. They had a beautiful idea, but the ball never made it into the hole. And we had a professional golfer come there to test the hole. So if anybody was going to do it, it was going to be her. So, you know, I like that aspect of the show the most. The little things that could go wrong that you learn when you're building one of these things that you didn't expect. And then you see the genius of one of these teams when they took that into consideration right from the beginning, usually because of the experience of the shop class teacher, and then they win the challenge. You know, it's super fun.
We are speaking with Spike Ferguson. He is the executive producer of Disney Shop Class, started today on Disney Plus, available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices all over the place. And he is with us live this half hour from Santa Monica, California, this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. So I have that with you live from New York. Good to have you aboard this final Friday of February 2020. If you have a question or a comment on Many Minutes with Spike, make the call happen, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Incidentally, all February long, we've had some amazing guests on this program, everyone from one of the co-stars of The Flash on the CW Victoria Park to Living in Color's co-star Tommy Davidson, who has the book out, Living in Color, which, by the way, we are awarding today as part of our classic trivia question. We have a brand-new winner, more about that in our next half hour, to J.C. Watts, the head of Black News Channel, the former Oklahoma Commerce person, to Wendy McMahon, the ABC-owned TV station's president, he was on a week ago, to Phil Wright, the executive producer of the upper-mentioned Disney Fan Jam that started on Disney Channel this past Sunday night. Great show, by the way. I have a feeling it's going to have a wonderful long run. So, if you want to catch up on any of our episodes this February, all you got to do is go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, www.blogtalkradio.com/televised, or go to iTunes, Apple TV, Speaker Podcast app, TuneIn.com, or iHeartRadio.com. And on the latter two, just put Tomorrow Will Be Televised in the search bar, click, and you are right there with all of our February episodes and earlier. Spike, you have had a very interesting career in television on both sides of the camera. How do you think about, you know, the fact you've been able to have such a versatile career, being a writer on Seinfeld, writing for David Letterman, your own talk show, the Esquire Network gig, and now this?
Well, you know, it's kind of a survival mechanism. you have show business, as we know, is a very tricky business. And if you want to work and continue working, it's good to have lots of different lanes to work in. So I've kind of expanded. I started off as a comedy writer. I started off as a receptionist at Saturday Night Live, and I've kind of built out from there as not just a comedy writer, but someone who gets in front of the camera and does comedy. As you mentioned, Car Matchmaker was born out of my love of collecting cars and driving cars. And, you know, that became a little passion project. And now, you know, I have this little production company, Hangar 56, with my old friend, John Stevens. He and I were both interns at David Letterman, and we've known each other forever. When he moved out to LA here, he created a show called Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? And I went out to write for Seinfeld, and, you know, we decided to get together and make those types of shows together. And you know, this is our one of our first series rolling out, and we couldn't be, you know, prouder of it.
By the way, John had a chance to see the new version of Are You Smarter that came out last year with John Cena on Nickelodeon?
You'd have to ask them that. I know he's happy to be getting checks, yeah. So I'm sure he's happy. That show was such a gift to those guys, and I watched them create it from the beginning, and yeah, I'm sure he's very, very proud of it.
Yeah, that was a wonderful show. Barry Potvin, who also worked on that for many years, and was on a show
right.
7 years ago when he mm-hmm. his little game show came for Oprah Winfrey Network. Now he's, of course, head of Unscripted MGM UA, MGM UA TV.
Yep.
It was a wonderful show. Jeff Foxworthy was sensational. He really turned out to be a very, very good game show host with that program.
He's terrific. And I'll tell you what, Justin Long in Shop Class, let me segue to Justin Long, is amazing in this show. He really surprised us. I only know Justin from his comedy appearances. My kids know him from Dodgeball, and Disney Plus suggested him as the host. And we went, well, that seems a little odd. I'm not sure I see him as a builder. But when he walked on the set, the way he gets along with the kids and the jokes he started making, and the kids lit up. They know him, that he has such a way with them. He's turns out he is a builder. He's kind of a out in the woods type of guy, and canoes and woodworking that we didn't know about. And he really brings the show to a new level. And every day, and you'll see it in the series, he's making these kids laugh and making us laugh in the booth. And it's part of what really makes this show a wonderful experience. He really, really crushed it. And, you know,
you mentioned Foxworthy, and immediately I think of Justin Long and what he just did with this series.
Yeah. You know, one of the big surprises so far about Disney Plus and the short time it's been on has been the unscripted shows. Shows like Encores, where you have high school class musical performers reunited as adults to do the same musical they did in high school, or the Jeff Goldblum show, The World According to, or The Imagination. It seems that has really become a nice early trademark of Disney Plus. It's been these very unique unscripted exercises.
It has. I mean, I can tell you from personal experience, and I know it sounds kind of corny, but I sat down and turned on the first episode of The Mandalorian when it was posted, and there I sat with my boys, and, you know, we had a great, you know, well-written TV series to watch together, which, as you know, if you're a parent, it's hard to find that stuff where you can sit down with your kids, and it's, you know, not really about being safe entertainment. It's more about, will this be safe, but also hold their attention, and will it hold mine? Like, are any of us slumming it here? So you watch The Mandalorian, and boom, I'm in. My boys are in, who are very critical. And you're like, there you go. This Disney Plus is now worth my money, because now I've got entertainment. And I believe, and maybe I'm wrong, but that's Jon Favreau's series, right? He put that together?
You bet.
Yeah, it's awesome. And you go, all right, in the beginning you're kind of like, well, maybe there's not as much money on the screen as a Star Wars series, but the storytelling grabs you right away, and then you've got Baby Yoda, and you're like, all right, I'm done. When is season two coming? So we have a show like that with Shop Class that will provide, you know, families with what The Mandalorian provided me when I was watching it with my kids.
Yeah, and incidentally, that is coming back this fall, along with High School Musical, the musical. We had one of the key people involved with that series, and I thought it was a wonderful show, and it's getting a great fan base. And also Diary of a Future President, Gina Rodriguez's program.
Yeah.
Also one definitely worth watching on Disney Channel.
Mm-hmm.
Very well done. Really sleeper. And before you go, Spike, with your production company, with Hangar, what else is coming out of there in the near future?
We have lots of development, nothing to announce right now, but there's some network stuff coming up very soon. So we will check back with you about that stuff. We're casting a really cool project right now that I'm excited about.
And right now the excitement is with Disney Shop Class. You can catch it today. It's opening day on Disney Plus, which is on all smart TV sets and smart TV devices as far as I know. For more details about the program online, go to www.disneyplus.com. That's www.disneyplus, that's P-L-U-S, not the plus sign, disneyplus.com. Disney Shop Class available now, and hopefully the beginning of a great, great run in store. Spike, pleasure to have you on the program for the first time. Let's have you back soon. All the best to you, John, everybody involved. Congrats on getting the show off the ground. As I said, hopefully the beginning of a wonderful, great run.
Thanks, man. Very nice to meet you.
Same here, Spike. Take care. Have a wonderful weekend.
All right, so long.
Fred Person from Santa Monica, California, joining us live this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. More of the promo on that television coming your way, but first some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. If you're in a nostalgic mood, you know, getting back to 1969, what life was like in those times, well, try on this audiobook. Maybe as early as this weekend. It's called Summer of 69 by Aaron Hildebrand. I just think it's a really, really super read and a very super listen. And on the listening side, you can get that audiobook right now if you become a test subscriber of Audible.com. Get a one-month trial, and that book could be yours, plus others too. You know, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. There's nearly 200,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, whatever you're hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, or iHeartRadio. Just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. And as simple as that, you get 3 free audiobooks, a 1 month trial of service, and great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. And by the way, 2 of those free audiobooks are from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. By I mean original audio productions, the best of Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater, and great one-woman and one-man shows. So hear for yourself today how Audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. For that 3 book trial, 1 month, free, it's audibletrial.com/televised. Coming up our next half hour, we keep the unique reality going with an interesting thing called Restaurant on the Edge. Think of it as maybe the ultimate restaurant impossible. Focus on impossible. We've got the creative executive producer, Courtney Hazlett. She joins us live from L.A. And we also have our new classic trivia winner. All that and more when we return after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio, Spreaker and TuneIn Radio, and also on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. BlogTalk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn together reach over 40 million subscribers around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, BTR is your home for Honeycomb Hideout. Check it out tonight with Johnny Davis at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. It's Honeycomb Hideout with Johnny Davis. And remember, don't forget tomorrow, TuneIn Radio in various ways will be live coverage of the South Carolina primary. So check it out, TuneIn Radio at TuneIn.com. And, of course, that's the BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com as well. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Televised for this February 28th, June 2020. This would normally be the final day of the month, but this is a leap year. So tomorrow is the final day. 39 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. We welcome you back to Tomorrow Televised, the program all about the tube. Tom Appleby, I'm here with you. Delighted to have you here with us. Another great guest coming your way in the half hour ahead, plus our latest classic trivia question winner. And if you have questions or comments for our guest ahead, make the call, 646-652-2906, or get into our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name, and blocks away the Comcast Televised, and get into our chat room. Sooner you do, sooner we hear from you. Well, a second reality show with a unique bet also premiered today. It's called Restaurant on the Edge, and it's from Netflix. And it's about unique restaurants that have very picturesque locations. And when they say on the edge, they really mean on the edge. But that's just half the story. The other half is trying to transform these restaurants from what they used to be to what they can be. Joining us live right now is the creator and executive producer of the program live from Los Angeles, former NBC News pop culture correspondent, Courtney Hazlett. Welcome in, Courtney.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure. How have you been going first few hours of your show on Netflix?
Life-changing. It's really wonderful. We actually wrapped shooting in July, and, we got our green light from Netflix over a year ago. So, you know, these things can feel like overnight successes, but in reality, it's a long, long process. And so I'm just thrilled to release it out into the wild.
Mm-hmm. What inspired you to put this series together with your colleagues?
Well, you know, the rule of thumb pretty much globally is the better the view, the worse the food when it comes to eating at restaurants that have, you know, just dazzling surroundings. And I was at a restaurant out here actually run by one of our co-hosts, Nick Liberato, who is the restaurateur on the series. And he's got a place right at the base of the Venice Pier here in L.A. It is waterfront, beachside. And I was like, wow, this is not bad. You know, this is actually good. And, you know, everything about it is really wonderful. It was this historic place. It actually kind of fell into shambles. It was big when the Beach Boys and the Rolling Stones were coming through L.A. and touring. And then it turned into one of those, you know, beachside, previously frozen fried food type restaurants. And Nick came in and really turned it around. And so that was kind of the seed. You know, let's go around the world. And there's so many places that just don't quite live up to their incredible surroundings. And we think we can help them out.
Mm-hmm. One would think that given where these restaurants are in places like Hong Kong and Costa Rica and St. Lucia, and in some cases they really are on the edge. That title is not just a metaphor, Miss Nobody. I mean, some of these places you find are really on the edge, you know, of a mountaintop
for sure. Or
water or something like that. One would think that these proprietors would have had the smarts or the thinking to keep their restaurants up to date with the times or up to date with the food or up to date with, you know, the location of where they are. So why didn't they in the first place?
One of the really surprising elements of this show, you know, when you create a show and you're developing it and then you're shooting it, you have what you think your show is and then what your show actually becomes once you're on the ground. And one of the surprising things for what the show became is it became a show really about the owner's hearts and their intention. And in so many cases, these owners are new to the restaurant world. You know, these are not seasoned restaurateurs. They are people who grew up going to this restaurant as a kid, and then suddenly it's for sale. and they didn't want to see this nostalgic place go away. In some cases, the owners decided to like leave the rat race and take all their savings and move to the islands and open it, you know, and live their dream. And what ends up happening is that reality is far different from the dream. And so I think in many, many cases, they inherited something that wasn't up to speed. If it was, then the original owner probably didn't want to let go of it. So, you know, they were kind of inheriting a problematic situation and then oftentimes just really in over their heads.
So it sounds like when you started to create this series, it started to be more sort of like a picturesque, you know, here are these unique restaurants and what they're all about. And it seems that in the process it became, and I use the metaphor Restaurant Impossible because it's been one of the Food Network's longest running shows and also has a sort of, you know, you're transforming not just the restaurant but the people who make it. And it seems that this is also the case here, that the side benefit, really the big benefit of the show is that these restaurant owners get a second life as well as a second coming of their restaurant.
Yeah, they definitely get a second life for sure. And I think one of the things that we recognize we have the ability to do, and as we continue to shoot the series, made more and more time to do this, is we reintroduce these owners to their culture. You forget how rich your own backyard can be sometimes. And sometimes the shortcomings of the restaurant, like not using local food, not having the energy of their surroundings and the things that are culturally special about where they are, find their way into the restaurant. Once we're able to meet those owners and really tap into what's going wrong and where there's opportunity for growth in the restaurant, we actually pull them out of the restaurant and go on some great adventures with them and get to know them better and show them, like, look at what you've got right here. You can be a tourist in your own place sometimes and really learn a lot and bring it back to your business.
How did you find these restaurants? Did they come to you, or did you do some research and find them?
Yeah, I'm really glad you're asking this question. Thank you. I'm actually really proud of the way we found these restaurants. One of the things, especially when you've got hosts that are two Canadians and an American, and we're traveling the world, I did not want people thinking we were just imposing our own beliefs coming from our own culture into a place halfway around the world. So what we did is we really turned to social media. We turned to restaurant reviews and, you know, found the places that literally had people saying, I ate here and the view was great, but the food not so much. And so we were able to say, you know, really have like a soft entry and a positive entry and say, this isn't our aspersion we're casting upon your restaurant, your business, but this is what we're reading. And it tells us there might be a ton of opportunity for growth if you're up for the ride.
We are speaking with Courtney Hazlett. She is the creative executive producer of Netflix's newest unscripted excursion. It's called Restaurant on the Edge. It premiered earlier today, and it's available on smart TV sets and smart devices, wherever you find Netflix, in some cases on cable systems as well. And Courtney joins us live from Los Angeles, where incidentally, in addition to working on this series, she's also an executive with one of the production companies that put it together, Out East Entertainment. We'll find out what they're up to a little later on this half hour. If a question or comment for Courtney, well, don't be shy. Make your voice go at 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. A week from Monday on Smart Hotel Live, we'll get into one of the big attractions coming next month here in the Big Apple, New York City Television Week. It's usually a fall attraction, but this year it's also going to be a spring fling. And we will have one of the key people who's making it happen. And his name is Bill Gannon. He's the Vice President and Global Editor-in-Chief of Future PLC, the folks behind broadcasting and cable, multi-channel news, and NYC Television Week. So join us live a week from Monday, March 9th, right here, VPN Eastern, New Pacific, on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. What was the toughest thing, Courtney, about putting this together?
Where do I start? you know, when you're shooting around the world, like, logistics are really, really tough. We have such a hardworking crew behind the scenes, not just the folks who were on the ground where we were, but also the folks in the production office who are making sure that all our contributors knew when to show up and what to expect. And, you know, how are we going to get that food catered to a set in a country with, you know, that's not used to catering to a big crew, TV crew, you know, it's just so many little things. And then, you were shooting in a very finite period of time, and so you don't have the luxury of saying, well, we're going to go when the weather is best in this place. For example, in this first season that dropped on Netflix today, the episode in Hong Kong, we had to shoot during monsoon season. And I lived in New Orleans for a while, and I know hurricanes, and I have never seen rain like that. And but the show must go on. You've got to get something on the film and take it back and turn it into a TV show.
When Robert Irvine and his Restaurant Impossible crew go to a specific location and do their thing with a restaurant, they've got 48 hours to turn that whole scene around.
Mm-hmm.
How much time did, once you got into Hong Kong or got into the Tobermory or got into wherever, how much time did you have with your designer, with your restaurateur to turn things around?
So we really wanted to make sure that we did our own thing. You know, we didn't want people saying this is just another show like the one you mentioned. And so we're not up against the clock in a way that you see on television. I choose to believe that, you know, it's understood when you're watching it that we got to get this done. You know, we obviously can't move in and stay for the summer. But in terms of production schedule, our shoots were 10 days. We have to have the restaurant looking like its original form for the beginning so that our hosts can walk in and we can see that before. And then we have to have it in good shape for the end. So in reality, that only left about 3 days to get the changes done that we were going to do. So you do as much as you can on the front end, knowing, like I said before, when you walk in, something's going to be different or something's going to be unexpected. And so it was a pretty tight schedule. And what our design team and our host, Karen, were able to pull off in about 72 hours is really impressive.
They had Karen Brown, the designer. You had the restaurateur, Dennis Prescott, and then Lucky Ricardo, who also served with you as an executive producer who's done a lot of television work. It's interesting because you have these three people working together, and also there's more than one production company working together. It's not just your company out east. You've also got Marvel Media, you got Blue Ant Media, and of course you have Netflix sort of overseeing things. So what's it like for you and your fellow producers to have, you know, to try to, A, have the three people on air collaborate with the restaurant subjects, and then all of you behind the scenes are collaborating to get the best product out you can?
Yeah, we were really lucky. So what we're doing right now is really pulling back the curtain on how television gets made, and that's with a lot of stakeholders. You know, usually no one has the luxury of having one entity to come in and take up the entire budget and all of the risk and things like that. So we're really lucky to have Marvel Media as our studio in Canada. Blue Ant was our network who partnered with us in Canada, which is why you'll see that the Netflix premiere in Canada is a little bit later because Blue Ant gets to hold on to that for a little longer on their Cottage Life channel. And then obviously we have Netflix as an incredible, incredible streaming host for us. And so everyone really has their own needs and their own ideas, and it's just a matter of, you know, communicating with the big team to make sure everybody is able to walk away with what they want, because obviously, you know, a linear broadcaster is going to have different creative thoughts than a streaming broadcaster sometimes. And we just my job as an executive producer is just make sure everybody plays nicely and we get the best product out.
Of these first six episodes, what to you was the most surprising to put together, either because the end result was so unexpected or because from start to finish, it was a very unexpected, you didn't expect that this was the location you were going to be at, and, you know, voila, there you are, you got to make the most of it.
Wow, that's such a tough question because I feel like I could cherry pick from several episodes. There was never an episode where at the end of that shoot I looked at myself and I looked at my crew and said, yeah, that went exactly as we thought it would. You know, the weather in Hong Kong was biblical. That created really crazy challenges. We shot in this really tiny fishing village called Tayo, which is considered the Venice, Italy of Hong Kong. It's lots of little canals, not many streets. And to go from where our vans could park to the actual restaurant was a 10-minute walk, often in a monsoon, with all of our cameras and everything. And, you know, you just hunker down and make it work. And then also just the crowds in Hong Kong are very different than the crowds we had in a little village in Austria. And, you know, that presents its own production challenges as well. I actually took a photo of a crowd of people in Hong Kong, and they all had their iPhones up, and they were shooting our shoot. And I joked, I'm like, look, it's the local B-roll team that has rolled in to help us out, you know. And then there were other places where you could kind of slip by mostly unnoticed. It was really fun to shoot in Malta. That's the first episode you'll see batched on this season on Netflix. Malta, you will recognize a lot of the locations from Game of Thrones and from other movies. And so shooting in a place with that much history that's been around for so many years, you know, the Phoenicians were fighting over Malta, that brings its own sort of gravitas, and you kind of approach your storytelling a little bit differently. I think if I had to wrap up your question in, you know, what's the most surprising part, it's just the way you have to pivot with your storytelling every single time, even though the common thread is restaurants, and from there our common threads are design and food and the business. The storytelling always has to pivot because those locations are different and those owners are different and the soul of each community is different.
Yeah. And what was it like to, in each location, you know, infiltrate, be with the culture, be with the local people, and not only encourage them to try this restaurant on, but also to have to sort of welcome the restaurant back into their local community?
You know, I have to say that was really one of the fun parts, because there are some locations where you could kind of slip in mostly unnoticed, and some locations where word was out, there's a crew filming for Netflix here. And so you couldn't kind of go incognito and just soak it all in, so to speak. What we did find to be true, no matter where we were, is people want to root for other people, and everyone loves a comeback story. And so when it came time for the grand reopening of these places, there was always a crowd outside the restaurant clamoring to come in to find out, how does it look different? How does it feel different? How is the food going to be different? It really made my heart happy just to see, especially where there's so much division right now here and worldwide, just to see people come together in so many different cultures. We were in cases where we had translators and really couldn't communicate with some of our contributors, but we always figured out a way around it, and it's just really heartwarming.
Restaurants on the Edge is what we're talking about, the brand-new Netflix unscripted series that premiered earlier today on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. We've got the creator and executive producer, Courtney Hazel, joining us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. So now I'm with you at the other side of the U.S. of A. 39 degrees at the top of the hour, expecting a cool weekend, and then it gets better temperature-wise the following week, first week of March. Happy to have you aboard. We've got a question or comment on our remaining minutes with Courtney. Make the phone ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And coming up in a few minutes, we will have our second Classic Trivia winner of 2020. We'll tell you who it is. We'll tell you about the answer to that question and a whole lot more. So stay tuned. Find out who our new Classic Trivia question winner is in a few moments here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. What kind of feedback have you heard from the restaurateur people since you filmed? Any word yet from any of the restaurant people, from the local culture, local authorities, about what you did?
Yeah, actually, I mean, one of the benefits of shooting around the world is a lot of them wake up much earlier than you do and get to hit play before you're even out of bed in Los Angeles. And so I woke up to some really lovely messages from a lot of the people who help facilitate, to the restaurant owners. They are just thrilled with how it came out. And, you know, I think one of the things that was really important to me when I created the show and formatted it is that they would be able to continue to replicate what we brought in after we leave. You know, the analogy is like, you never want to, it's more for women than men, but you never want to get a haircut and like never look as good as you did when you left the salon. So we want to come in and create these dishes, and our chef Dennis Prescott did a brilliant job of figuring out what was local and sustainable and something the restaurant could handle and replicate and do over and over again and pivot need be seasonally, but they could grasp it, and the decor is something they could maintain, and the business suggestions that Nick had were things that they could do and improve upon over time. So the response really has been overwhelmingly positive from the owners, who truly took a risk and really believed in us and our vision to agree for us to come in.
And by the same token, Courtney, is the phone ringing from restaurants and other parts, other edges of the world that would like to have you and your crew visit them?
I certainly hope that when I pick up my phone again after you and I have spoken, that I do have some messages like that. And also, you know, from locals who say, hey, we want to help these people out. Because, again, it's, yeah, it's about the restaurant. It's about that building. But it's really, you know, about these people who are pouring their heart and soul into this dream and this vision. So I welcome any and all suggestions and hope we can get another season that's really sourced from folks on the ground.
Yeah, Courtney, one of the nice things about this particular episode of our show is that there have been a lot of themes to it. Unscripted reality shows, both of them premiered today. They're both from Mega Filming Services, Disney Plus, in your case, Netflix. Both have helped get both these services reps. But also, that both our guests, both you and Spike, are people who have had experience both in front of and behind the camera. And I'm curious how you like your role now, where you are not only behind the camera, but you're actively developing the shows that you put together.
I first of all, could never have imagined 10 years ago that this is what I would be doing. So it's just even hard to compare the two sometimes. But I caught some of what Spike was saying about how, you know, he loves sitting down on the couch with his kids and having something that they not only could watch but become engaged in. You know, it's not like the blank stares you see from kids. And what I love right now is I was able to have my kids in the back of my mind as I shot and created this show, with the goal that other families can sit and share the experience. I know we're all supposed to be putting our screens down and not watching so much TV, but the fact of the matter is there's a lot of bonding that can happen over TV. And it's a way that you can be with your family without having to talk sometimes. And if that can span generations, then I feel like I've put something really good out there. And so that's what I love most about what I do now.
It just seems that Netflix has had this, over the last 2 years, this incredible run of unscripted shows. The revival of Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, Cheer, The Maria Kanda Show, Your Program, Love is Blind. It seems that Netflix has become the new gold standard, or one of the new gold standards, for unscripted television that really does take people to very unique places and very unique situations.
First of all, I'm flattered to be in the same, my show to be included in the same sentence as those. I'm actually cavilling over here. But yeah, Netflix is really a great partner for this sort of thing. They really do give you so much creative room to take your risks, but never without feeling like you don't have their total support and guidance when you need it. So yeah, I feel really fortunate that we were able to take up some of their real estate and learn from their guidance.
Mm-hmm. So with Out East, where you are now, what's coming up? What's next for you and your company?
Actually, just yesterday it was announced that we have an ABC pilot, and it is being showrun by Erica Messer, who's just a legendary showrunner, and directed by John Chu, who has Crazy Rich Asians coming up. So that's our next big one, actually scripted television, not non-scripted. So we like to flex and do lots of different things, and we're really excited about that one. The show's called Triage.
That's the new medical drama. That's the first of a series called Off-Cycle Pilot that ABC announced yesterday.
Yep, a second cycle pilot, which is great. It means you're kind of out of the scrum of the traditional pilot and upfront season, and can take a little bit more time and put the pieces of the puzzle together. And yeah, we're really excited about it. Our screenwriter, David Cornu, this has been his baby for a long time, and we've been developing it with him for quite some time. So we're thrilled that it's found a home, and we get to be part of this new wave of development, and can't wait to see it take off.
And right now, you can check out Courtney's company, Out East Entertainment, on Netflix with their new series, Restaurants on the Edge. 6 episodes now your way on Netflix, available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices everywhere. For more details about the program online, go to Netflix.com. That's www.netflix.com, Restaurants on the Edge. Courtney Hayes, the creative executive producer of the program, thank you for joining us. Congratulations on getting the show off the ground. Hope it has a wonderful run. And again, congratulations to your colleagues on the Triage program coming up, hopefully on ABC. Hopefully we'll see it either later this year or next year. And if we do, we'd love to have you back along with the people making that show.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. It was a thrill.
You're welcome, Courtney, and have a super weekend.
So long.
Courtney Hayes, creator and executive producer of Restaurants on the Edge on Netflix now, joining us live from Los Angeles. Now it's time for our classic trivia question segment, and we have our second 2020 winner, and that is Melanie Christie. That's Melanie Christie. We're trying to find out where she lives. I know she lives somewhere because she responded to our classic trivia question with the correct answer today. The question, which we've had over the last 2 weeks, who was the original player of The Flash on CBS when the first live-action version appeared in 1990-91? That was the version on Thursday nights, 8 o'clock, up against The Cosby Show on NBC and The Simpsons on Fox. The answer, John Wesley Shipp, S-H-I-P-P. He was a popular star in daytime dramas such as Guiding Light. He won an Emmy Award, Daytime Emmy, for his role on As the World Turns in 1988. 1989, he won a guest supporting role Emmy for his work on Santa Barbara, and then it broke into the primetime side of the business with The Flash. And incidentally, you can see him on the current version of The Flash, Tuesday nights at 8 o'clock on the CW in the East Coast and West Coast. He plays the father of the current person who plays The Flash now in his sixth season on that network. So once again, the answer, John Wesley Shipp. And we thank Melanie Christie for providing the answer. And for that, she's going to get two book prizes, The 5-Second Rule by Mel Robbins, the author and daytime talk show host, and from Tommy Davidson, the co-star of Living Color, his brand-new book published by Kensington Books. Tommy was on our show earlier this month. That's Living in Color, What's Funny About Me. So they're coming your way once we get the full family address, which we hope you get soon. And we thank you for playing. And thanks to everybody who checked out the Texas Tribute question. We'll have a brand new one for you on Monday's show. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. And if you can't get the question then on Tuesday morning, find me on Facebook or follow me on Twitter. We'll put the question there, at UBC Simon TWBT. That's my Twitter handle, at UBC Simon TWBT. And before we leave you, I want to give a shout-out to a publicist whose last day it is today at Viacom CBS, Meredith Tiger. She's been at CBS, now Viacom CBS, for a decade and a half. She was a great person for us to be involved with, to get guests for Tomorrow We Televised and subject matter for my Media Village column on the web. So, Meredith, congratulations on your 15 years. Have a great last day. I know that, for sure, you left CBS in a better place than when you started, and that is a sensational accomplishment. And hopefully your next media venture will be back together again collaborating. And incidentally, I also want to give a shout-out to all the Viacom CBS employees whose last day is today under a budget cut. Remember, with one door closing, another door will open. As somebody who has had that situation a number of times in the course of 40 years covering the world of television, it does happen, and when it does, another door will open. So please be of good cheer, and congrats on what you did at Viacom CBS. Next episode coming your way on Monday. If you're seeing last day's episode, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. If you express this program with those of the participants, that goes to Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune Radio, and iHeartRadio. Tomorrow we televised is brought to you by Audible.com, an Amazon company. Remember, Audible transformed the way you hear the world. Remember, for 3 free audiobooks, 1 month trial, audibletrial.com/televised. For Tomorrow We Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful weekend. We're back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, Twitter Radio, and the iRadio podcast that whatever you're up to doing this weekend, please make it safe and make it great now more than ever. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned.